We should be grateful.
Please go ahead.
Yes, we should be grateful that we have this technology that allows us to connect. Although I must say, it always is a little intimidating to me. I start a fair ways beforehand to try and connect up my internet, and often it gives me some problems. Anyways, I'm very pleased to see you all, and I'm going to put this on gallery because I don't really want to look at my face that much. Screen speaker gallery. There we are. It's a wonderful crowd out there. Lots of people that I know and love. And I see a number of the newly minted bodhisattvas, which is great to see. So this evening, I'm talking about Vimalakirti and his response to an ailing world. We're about halfway through the practice period. And the text we have been studying throughout this period is the Vimalakirti Sutra. Tonight, I want to focus on Vimalakirti's response to his ailing world of ancient India and what he might have to say to us in these challenging times that we live in. One statement of his: because all living beings are sick, therefore I am sick. If all living beings are relieved of sickness, then my sickness will be mended. Vimalakirti spoke these words to Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of compassion, when he inquired about the causes and conditions of his illness. I found these words stopped me in my tracks, and they've been echoing through my mind ever since. Vimalakirti is thought to have lived at the time of the Buddha, some 2,600 years ago. This story would have been passed down verbally for a few hundred years and then recorded in writing around 500 years later. The sutra is one of the earliest Mahayana texts. The Mahayana tradition moved from the earlier idea of a sort of personal liberation or nirvana in favor of the path of the bodhisattva. In Mahayana Buddhism, a bodhisattva refers to anyone who has generated bodhicitta, a spontaneous wish and compassionate mind to attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Vimalakirti was revered by all for his great wisdom and insights into the laws of impermanence. But what really set Vimalakirti apart from the many disciples of the Buddha is that Vimalakirti had not chosen the path of a monk, but rather that of a householder. He is described as a family man with children, wealthy and engaged in business, and a strong community member who sought the company of all. Contemporaries, Vimalakirti and the Buddha had chosen very different paths to their spiritual realization. Siddhartha, the nascent Buddha, at the age of 29, felt compelled to pursue his spiritual quest to understand the nature of suffering and how to end it. He fled his home, abandoning his wife and son, to take up the responsibility and profoundly disappointing his father, a king, who had wanted his son to take up the responsibilities of a ruler. Siddhartha spent the next 6 years following the life of an ascetic, that of trying to rid the body of defilements. Basically, the body was seen as impure or tainted and something to be overcome. It was viewed as the source of karmic bondage, that which kept us welded to the wheel of samsara. Close relationships with others, particularly women, were forbidden. The ascetics lived away from the villages, and human contact only interacting with the larger community when seeking alms or food. During this period, Siddhartha studied with several great teachers, practiced austerities, and attained many rarefied states of mind, but he still was not satisfied. He had not yet penetrated to the roots of suffering, nor discerned the path out. That realization would happen during his great insight under the Bodhi tree that all living things are impermanent and insubstantial in nature. He also recognized that the path to understanding did not lie in the extremes of denial of our human form, nor indulgence of it, but rather with the middle way. In the case of Vimalakirti, there is no indication of how he came to his deep realizations. When we encounter him, he is portrayed as having the wisdom of the Buddha, and there are no flaws in his understanding, something that cannot be said for any of the bodhisattvas, any of the other bodhisattvas. Vimalakirti is the mirror image of the Buddha. He is the layperson versus a monk, a householder with a wife and children, in contrast to the celibacy of the monastics. He earns a livelihood and is rich and participates actively in his community. The Buddha and Vimalakirti are like two sides of the same coin. I actually sort of wonder if they aren't sort of one and the same person. Perhaps the Buddha has done some shape-shifting and is manifesting as Vimalakirti to show how the path to enlightenment can take many forms. But these different routes come to the same points of realization, that all conditioned things are arising and passing in the eternal flow. Everything is united in the tapestry of life, and there are no dualities, only differences in the different aspects of the same energy. So how do these eternal truths relate to our complex, technologically driven, stressed out world? And how might Vimalakirti respond to our current environmental and societal challenges? When we first encounter Vimalakirti, he is very ill, alone, and lying in a single bed in a bare room. The Buddha has been trying to get one of his disciples and bodhisattvas to visit Vimalakirti. They have each refused because of their intimidation of Vimalakirti's superior knowledge and understanding of the Dharma. Each of them has previously had an encounter with Vimalakirti during which he has shown them their limitations. Finally, the Buddha turns to Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, and states, "You must go visit Vimalakirti and inquire about his illness." Manjushri is also reluctant. But as the Buddha has commanded this, he says he will go. He describes Vimalakirti as profoundly enlightened and skilled at preaching the essentials of the law of the Dharma. Quote, "In wisdom and expedient means, he has mastered all there is to know." It's curious that all of these esteemed spiritual masters would shy away from an opportunity to be with and learn from a person who is clearly has a profound understanding of the true nature of reality. Perhaps their egos are getting a bit in the way. Vimalakirti has chosen to give the teaching from a position of great vulnerability. He is gravely ill, lying alone in a single bed in a bare room. When Manjushri inquires about the nature and treatment for his illness, Vimalakirti expands his personal illness to a universal dimension. Back to that statement I made before, he states, "Because all beings are sick, therefore I am sick. If all beings are relieved of sickness, then my sickness will be mended." This realization that our lives are utterly dependent and intertwined with all others is the fundamental truth that we as a species need to embrace to heal our environmental crisis and social dis-ease. Few people deny that our Earth is showing signs of great stress and illness. Globally, there are cataclysmic weather events, floods, fires, hurricanes, depletion of species are reported to us daily. The COVID pandemic that we have been living through for the past 2.5 years has shown us clearly that disease cannot be contained within borders, and our fate is bound to each other. As our climate becomes increasingly hostile to life, society is gyrating in a state of upheaval. Nations are closing down their borders to refugees who are fleeing intolerable conditions. Prices are going up, supply chains crumble, and crops are wilting. The divide between the rich and poor widens as people scramble to secure their own positions. Ultra-conservative governments are being elected around the world. I believe Vancouver just elected one like that. Maybe so far you've been lucky and sheltered from these experiences. It's very tempting to believe that somehow it will all get fixed by science, God, political leaders, without us having to get too deeply involved. It's been interesting to watch people's response to our recent sunny weather. Rare is the person who doesn't prefer warm, bright sunshine to cold, gloomy rain. I am often greeted by comments of how wonderful the weather is, that aren't we blessed? Of course, there is a downside. I believe up in the Sunshine Coast, you're into level 4 drought conditions, and they have just prohibited the use of water by anything, drinking water by businesses, even including breweries. The leaves on the deciduous trees aren't turning their beautiful golden hues. Rather, they are just wilting and dropping off. Salmon that have returned from the ocean for their annual spawning are greeted by dried up streams and hot waiting pools. Unable to fulfill their biological destiny of laying eggs upstream, instead, they are perishing on dried up riverbanks. It is very uncomfortable to look at the dysfunctional nature of much of our world and to consider how our habitual patterns support this suffering. Vimala Kirti, when asked by Manjushri what was the cause of illness, identified the root when he replied, "This illness of mine is born of ignorance and feelings of attachment." Here he has encapsulated the first two parts of the Four Noble Truths. The first being, life is suffering or unsatisfactory. And the second is that this suffering is caused by our attachments or negative habitual patterns. Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book, The Heart of the Buddhist Teaching, has reframed the Four Noble Truths to focus on the uplifting or restorative intent of the Noble Truths. He expressed the first Noble Truth as awareness of suffering or recognition of the existence of the unsatisfactory quality at the base of our lives. In our affluent society, often the temptation is to turn a blind eye or, on the flip side, to give into feelings of hopelessness and despair. The challenges in our world are immense, and our ability to do something can seem so insignificant. However, unless you open to the suffering and allow yourself to become aware, you can't begin to do anything about it. Thich Nhat Hanh says, quotes, embrace your suffering and let it reveal to you the way to peace. One of the ways that Vimalakirti works with this awareness is by staying closely associated with those who are enmeshed in this mortal realm. When Manjushri asks them, how is the emancipation of the Buddhas or enlightenment to be found, Vimalakirti advocates for turning back into the quagmire of human existence. Quote, it may be sought in the minds and actions of all living beings. He takes as his attendants a host of devils and non-Buddhist believers. Why? Because these beings delight in the realm of birth and death. A bodhisattva has vowed to remain in this realm of form until all beings are emancipated from ignorance. Bodhisattvas embrace the company and embrace their company while still maintaining their equilibrium and insight into our true nature. Vimalakirti uses the analogy of a parent with a child. If a child is sick, so too will be the parent. And when they are cured, the parents regain health. Quote, a bodhisattva is like this, for he loves living beings as though they were his children. If living beings are sick, the bodhisattva will be sick. If living beings are cured, the bodhisattva too will be cured. This illness of the bodhisattva arises from their compassion for the suffering of others. So who are these bodhisattvas to which Vimalakirti refers? Actually, he makes reference to bodhisattvas 57 times in 6 short pages in chapter 5. Clearly, he's trying to draw our attention to them. Traditionally, a bodhisattva is a person who takes a vow to remain in this world of samsara as long as others remain in ignorance. They have forfeited their own personal salvation or nirvana in favor of returning to this realm of body and form until all beings are liberated. Shantideva, an 8th century monk, put it this way in his famous poem. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. This Sunday, I had the privilege of witnessing the Jukai ceremony, during which time 6 mountain rain participants formally took the bodhisattva vows. These vows, which we repeat often during service, are: beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Michael pointed out during the ceremony that as everyone there had repeated these vows, we were all on the path of the bodhisattva. Vimalakirti, I believe, is talking to all of us as aspiring bodhisattvas to deepen our understanding of the Dharma, to live lives of integrity and kindness, and to embrace our unity with all beings, both now and forever. If we are all aspiring bodhisattvas who have vowed to save all beings, how do we approach people who hold very different views from us? Perhaps instead of trying to associate with only those individuals who hold the same point of view as yourself, how would it be to consider a different perspective? For example, we have witnessed how incredibly divisive the issues of vaccines, particularly with COVID, have become. There are those who believe the vaccines are an important mandatory public health measure, and those who hold that individual choice and responsibilities are critical for maintaining health and freedom. Perhaps a non-dualistic approach would be to look more deeply for the interests these groups hold in common. This is something referred to, at least in the conflict resolution terminology, as finding the basis of unity. A story from my own life. About 40 years ago, I worked for the BC Civil Liberties as their police complaints officer. People would often call our office and relate incidents where they believed their rights had been violated. In Vancouver at this time, the complaints were dealt with internally by the police themselves. The officer that oversaw the whole complaint procedure was the deputy police chief, so second in command. I would have periodic visits with him to discuss the issues and concerns re-police actions. In general, I would say the police were frequently defensive and I was often intimidated. At one point, I was to meet with a new deputy police chief, and I decided I would try a different tack. I would drop my agenda and hopefully preconceived notions and just go and meet a person with whom I had not interacted before. We began with the usual small talk. He soon mentioned that his wife was very ill and in the hospital. Here was this elderly man facing the possible loss of his lifetime partner. My heart went out to him and compassion flooded in. Perhaps he also felt the opening because next he asked me if I would like an education about the work that the police do and the stresses they encounter. I agreed. Over the next few weeks, I was given a firsthand experience of what a cop on the block sometimes faces. I was taken for a ride in the back of a paddy wagon, which very interesting. The paddy wagons at that time, at least, they just had metal benches on both sides, nothing to hold on to. And so as it would turn corners in that, I would be jostled all around. From the paddy wagon, where apparently many people emerged swinging, I was given a tour of the police lockup area. Another time, I walked the beat with an officer whose job was to go on foot throughout the downtown east side, visiting many of the infamous haunts along route. Going into a pub with a uniformed officer, I could feel the silence and hostility that greeted us as soon as we entered. The whole experience had indeed been illuminating. I came away with a much deeper awareness and sympathy for the stress the police officers face. Afterwards, I wrote a sincere letter of gratitude to the police chief who had organized this very informative experience. I realized that I had moved from apprehension to respect and gratitude, and our working relationship was now open and cordial. In conclusion, our world and lifestyle contains much suffering. The food we eat, clothes we wear, cars we drive contain this kernel of suffering. We are meshed in a global system that often does not consider how things are produced or disposed of. What is the impact on labor, consumer, or environment? It is definitely not comfortable to turn and face these realities. But the consequence of not facing them is actually much, much worse. However, if suffering and confusion were the totality of our existence, there would be very little reason for hope. What Vimalakirti shows us is that our practice and is the eternal truth of impermanence, that everything is in the constant flow of change and unity, that there is no separate self, are the bedrock on which we can stand. We are all bodhisattvas in training, turning back into this world with its 10,000 joys and sorrows, guided by our vows of saving all beings and becoming our enlightened Buddha nature. We set our intention to help nurture a world of well-being for all. Vimalakirti's eternal intention. Because all living beings are sick, therefore I am sick. If all living beings are relieved of sickness, then my sickness will be mended. Thank you all very much for listening.
Thank you, Vicky. Do we have any questions you would like us to speak together in small groups?
Yes. So I had a couple. One of them is that I thought, try and think of someone with whom you have a conflict. And try and think of what is it that you're grateful for in them.
Okay.
And then the second one, how does your spiritual practice assist you to face the challenges in the world?
Wonderful. So now.
Oh, and I should also mention that as always, what is said in these breakout groups should remain private to them. And if these questions are not ones that